Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Monday, April 20th. I'm Ray Graff. Support for Medical Monday comes from Stewart Shops, offering groceries, food to go, and beverages, as well as hot, iced, and cold brew coffee. We are closer to you. Joining us this afternoon is Dr. Maggie McCarthy of Albany ENT and Allergy Services. Dr. McCarthy is an audiologist specializing in the treatment of hearing loss, tinnitus, and providing preventative education. She attended the College of St. Rose, received her doctorate of audiology from Indiana University. You have a question about your hearing? I'll say it loud so you can hear it. Do you have a question about your hearing? 800-348-2551 is our number. 1-800-348-2551. You can email voxpop@wamc.org. We'll get underway right after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. In the studio this afternoon is Dr. Maggie McCarthy of Albany ENT and Allergy Services. Dr. McCarthy is an audiologist specializing in the treatment of hearing loss, tinnitus, and providing preventative education. She attended the College of St. Rose, received her doctorate of audiology from Indiana University. Prior to joining Albany ENT and Allergy, Dr. McCarthy served as an audiologist in the U.S. Navy, at home and abroad. Dr. McCarthy is a member of multiple professional organizations and holds a certificate of clinical competence, audiology, from the American Speech Language Hearing Association. Got a question about your hearing? How to fix it? Okay, give us a call. 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. You can also email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Dr. Maggie McCarthy, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure.
Hearing is something that is near and dear to my heart, so I think we'll have a lot of fun here today. You were in the Navy. That must
be
special hearing challenges there with the booms and everything else, yeah?
Absolutely. I was responsible for the hearing conservation program for sailors and Marines in Virginia Beach, Rota, Spain, and Camp Lejeune, North Carolina. So I saw a lot of different things.
And what mainly did you see? What was the predominant thing you saw?
My job was generally to follow up with patients after they had had a screening test. And if they needed hearing aids, I was their hearing healthcare provider. I also provided a lot of counseling about tinnitus and ringing in the ears.
And we'll be talking about that a lot today.
Absolutely.
I wanted to ask you about hearing aids to begin the show. So in the very old days, and I don't know how far back they go, but at least 100 or 200 years, you had the ear trumpets. And it was a little thing you put in your ear, and then it looked like a trumpet, and it would magnify the sound. Then later, and I only learned about this not too long ago, in maybe the 20s and 30s, people had little handheld devices that they went around with as sort of the proto-hearing aid. Then we had hearing aids that went in the ear, and they were kind of a straight, as I understand it, a straight affair. They amplified everything. Could be very annoying, depending on what the sound is. Today, we are now at a stage where we have DSP, digital signal processing, and it has changed the game.
Absolutely. You know, anybody who has cupped their ear to hear something.
Did it earlier.
You know, that's your portable hand ear trumpet. You can do that at any time. No technology needed. But certainly when we use the technology that we use to run our computers or our, you know, back in the day, our iPods or yeah. Our headphones, our cell phones, all of those different technologies that are capable of producing sound from a very small speaker. That's really the key to help us make hearing aids work better for more people in a variety of circumstances.
Dr. Maggie McCarthy of Albany ENT and Allergy Services joins us today. It's audiology. DSP, though, how does it actually work in an individual? How can you tailor that? And how does the whatever it is sort of adapt on its own when you're out in the real world?
So a hearing aid separates sound into different channels, and those different channels treat different sounds independently, which is sometimes really hard for people to understand unless we show them on our computer, which we unfortunately can't always do. But the hearing aid is going to break sounds up into frequency bands, so low pitches like a deep bass tone versus high-pitched ringing tones, and then loud, medium, and soft. And so all of those different sounds being treated independently, if we can put the environmental sounds into those buckets, it allows us to tell the hearing aid, I need to hear the letter T, I need to hear the letter S, but don't confuse the letter S with wind, because an S shouldn't last that long. And that's the difference between hearing aids in 2026 versus even hearing aids in 2010.
This is amazing. But who programs it?
Your audiologist or hearing aid
specialist.
So
you program it.
Correct.
However, you get out, you give Ray his hearing aids, which he's needed for about 15 years, and he goes out in the world. He calls you the next day. I need to adjust.
That's totally normal. So in our practice, what we do is every patient who gets a hearing aid fitting appointment, where we customize the programming, we tailor it, albeit in a quiet office, which is not the real world. And then we send you out into the environment. We send you out into the real world and we say, I want you to go out there, try it in a variety of circumstances, try it with your family, go out to dinner, make this an excuse for date night, and then come back and I want to hear the good, the bad, and the ugly. I want to know what you like, what you didn't like, what worked, what didn't work, what surprised you. And that's the information that your hearing healthcare provider needs to really tailor the experience to you.
But there are no, at this time, self-adaptive AI hearing aids.
A lot of the hearing aids are using AI to train the actual chip. And what sometimes some people get really nervous about that. They think, well, I don't want AI on my head all the time.
Oh, I do.
And that's not exactly how it works. But the hearing aid is using AI to predict what's the speech that you need to hear. And so how can I tell the difference between speech coming from the person sitting across the table from me versus speech coming from the person at the booth next, you know, one seat over? And so that's the information that the hearing aid is using to try and predict what conversation should I be amplifying.
And how's it doing?
It's so much better than it used to
really?
Be. It's still not perfect, though. It's still not perfect. And even hearing aids, while they are the treatment for hearing loss, they are not the cure to hearing loss. And that's something we often have to remind people.
There is no cure, is there?
There, for the most part, there is no cure. But we are still working with a damaged system. Instead of fixing the system, we're trying to augment your environment so that you can use that information better. And sometimes if we just make sure we reiterate that perspective, it can be really helpful for people.
We're joined today by Dr. Maggie McCarthy, an audiologist with Albany ENT and Allergy Services. The email address is voxpop@wamc.org, and the number is 800-348-2551. Yeah, just a couple more minutes here of the interrogation, and then we'll take a break, and then we'll go to the emails and phones. You mentioned a multi-frequency band unit, okay? Your hearing aid covers how many bands? I'm used to parametric EQs and graphic equalizers, and some of them have 20 frequency bands. Some parametrics might have 3 or 4 or 5.
It really depends on the hearing aid manufacturer and the level of technology. So sometimes patients will ask, you know, I want the best hearing aid for me. That might not always be the best hearing aid that's out there. You might not have a lifestyle that demands the features that are in that device. But for a patient who maybe has tinnitus, maybe has very specific hearing loss issues, they may benefit from a higher level of technology for just that reason. It gives me more bands that I can manipulate independently, as opposed to some that maybe only have 6 bands that I can manipulate. If I can get 36 bands, we're going to have a much easier time personalizing that sound.
I have 4 hours worth of questions for you, but we only have a brief amount of time. Dr. Maggie McCarthy joins us today. It's 800-348-2551. Just a couple of more questions. We'll put your Navy service aside, because that may be a different set of circumstances. But for those who aren't in the Navy or aren't rock and roll musicians or aren't DJs or radio broadcasters, where is the predominant hearing loss in the spectrum for just the average person walking around?
Typically, hearing loss starts in the higher frequencies. That is also why a lot of people will say, I don't have a hearing problem. I have an understanding problem. Or I can hear you. I just don't know what you said. Or you're mumbling. When you start to lose the higher pitches, those sounds include S, F, T, TH, K. Those soft, we call them fricative sounds, they're not voiced. You can't yell them. I can't make them any louder. They just, it's air passing through my teeth or my lips, and that's just how it is.
Yeah.
Those sounds give speech its clarity and its meaning, and when you start to lose those sounds, that's when you start to have trouble in background noise, with accents, and that can happen for a variety of reasons, not just the noise exposure that
right.
might come from the activities you listed.
But, I mean, how do you, or should I say, when does the average person start sloping down on their high frequencies?
It really depends. For the longest time, we would say, you know, there's normal age-related hearing loss.
Right.
And, you know, then we look at communities that are untouched by certain technologies, and we find out, oh, there's actually these things we call golden ears in the research community. And golden ears are people who live maybe until their 80s, 90s with basically no hearing loss.
Oh, come on.
I know. If only we could all be blessed with such hearing.
How's your hearing?
My hearing is not what it used to be, but I still shouldn't complain.
All right, fair enough, but I'll complain. Let's take a break. 800-348-2551. It's Medical Monday, Audiology Today, with Dr. Maggie McCarthy of Albany ENT and Allergy Services. Back in a flash. Vox Pop on WAMC, the late, great Gary McFarland, and up, up, and away here on Vox Pop. It's Medical Monday. Dr. Maggie McCarthy joins us today. It's audiology. Now, let's go to the, you having fun so far?
Oh, yeah.
All right, let's go to the emails, and then we'll see. Marion writes in, I've passed a hearing test, yet I have trouble understanding people in person or on TV when they seem to mumble or speak fast. Is that more of a cognitive problem than a hearing problem? Also, would purchasing a sound bar for my TV help me with hearing dialogue, especially watching old movies?
That's an awesome question that I hear probably at least once a day, if not more than once a day. My first answer to the question about cognition can certainly be a big factor in this, and that's why at our practice we recommend a auditory training program. And auditory training is like physical therapy for the listening centers of your brain. We don't usually think of listening as an activity that we can exercise, but often I'll tell musicians, people who work in the industry, you know, you're used to listening as a skill. Not everybody uses their ears that way. And so there are things that we can train or improve when it comes to focus, attention, short-term memory, working memory, understanding rapid speech. And that's where that's really where the cognition piece overlays the hearing sensitivity.
Can you give me an example of how I could train my auditory skills?
At Albany ENT, we offer a program called LACE AI, which is an app. It's a well-researched and established program from Neuromonics, and it is a program that tailors the activities to you and your needs. That's just one example, but there are a lot of oral rehabilitation, and that's oral with an A-U,
right.
Oral rehabilitation programs that can help you train those parts of your brain.
You know what I found in my old age, and believe me, my house is noisy all the time with kids screaming and TVs on and whatever. I have trouble when it's a lot of voices at once. And one thing I think, and I've discovered that I've learned sort of how to lip read. I watch people's faces and I can hear them enough that I can see what they're saying. And I realized it when a couple weekends ago I turned the TV on with no sound. And then I said, oh my gosh, I know what they're saying.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing.
For a lot of patients, that's what brought them first into the office during COVID, when they realized how much they relied on lip reading when everyone put on a mask. All of a sudden, you didn't have that cue. Much of communication is visual. It is not auditory. We rely so much on how people's faces are positioned, what they're doing with their face. That's so important to understanding what someone means when they're talking to you. And so, you know, masks certainly make that challenging for people with hearing impairment. I don't want to forget the other half of her question with regard to the sound bar. You know, having hearing aids that are tailored to your hearing loss, especially if you have even a mild high frequency hearing loss, that can certainly help with the television. But I have a lot of patients where that's either not an option for them, or maybe their hearing loss is not significant enough for them to feel motivated to pursue hearing aids. We recognize that it is a sizely investment for a lot of people, but a sound bar can be a really good way to just help yourself, because if you can reduce the distance from the sound, give yourself a better signal to noise ratio, is how we refer to it in audiology. And so if you can improve that signal, how it's being delivered to you and how close it is to you. Another thing to consider is the age of the recording. So if we think about a vinyl record that was produced physically, that sound is so different than an MP3 digitization of a playing of a recording of something
else.
Oh
my gosh. Now, just for a minute. Now you're really piquing my interest. Expound on that, and then we'll go to the next email.
So digital sounds are squares. They're not waves. And so if you cut all the corners off that nice, rich, smooth vinyl record, and instead of getting true waves carved into the vinyl, now you have a bunch of squares, it's going to feel like Legos instead of like the music we're expecting.
This is great. You've just given me great justification to buy a lot of vinyl albums. Thank you. Louise writes in, mine is really bad, my tinnitus, that is, and getting worse. And so is my hearing. Hearing aids help, but is it ever going to stop getting worse? I just flew with a bad cold, lost hearing in one ear for days, just took steroids for a week, but still have awful buzzing. Your thoughts?
Oh, no, that really is a tough one. I will say, you know, flying with a cold, I'm never going to tell you not to go on vacation, but flying with a cold really can catch some people by surprise because of the pressure change. Tinnitus is generally a symptom of hearing loss in most cases, but there are so many different metabolic reasons that can either exacerbate, bring tinnitus to light, make it more prevalent. And so if you already have tinnitus and then we change how your middle ear system is functioning. Your middle ear is the part that we say pops when you drive through the mountains or when you fly in an airplane. And if that middle ear space isn't at the right tension or stiffness, that's going to change how everything sounds. And your brain does not like change. Your ears do not like things to change. So if that pressure is still lingering, or if you have what we would be concerned of for a sudden hearing loss, then that tinnitus can take some time to calm down and maybe go back to baseline or where it was before. The other thing to keep in mind is if you're anxious about this new change, if you're experiencing stress, if you're not eating well, if you're not sleeping well, if you drink too much alcohol or eat too much salt, these are all additional factors that might contribute to your tinnitus. And so sometimes impacting one of those factors can help just take the edge off enough for you to realize, okay, I'm doing okay. Maybe it is related to my hearing, or maybe I wasn't sleeping well, or I have some stressor that I'm not addressing in my life, And when I try to address that or make positive change, now I realize, yeah, it's still there. I can still hear it if I look for it, but it's not driving me crazy anymore. And it stops that snowballing effect from really getting out of control.
I have a feeling we will have more tinnitus questions as we roll on here. One more email, and then we got to hit the phones. We have a lot of calls. 800-348-2551. Dr. Maggie McCarthy of Albany ENT at Allergy Services joins us. All right, this one's from Barbara, and then to the phones we will go. Barbara writes, I have fullness in one ear, on and off, due to TMJ jaw issues. I'm sure it affects my hearing in that ear. Do you treat that?
Typically, when we do a test and someone expresses those exact same symptoms, it doesn't typically impact your hearing sensitivity. But similar to what I was describing with the airplane example,
yeah,
it might distort the sound quality. Oftentimes, when people do not have pre-existing hearing loss and they experience an ear infection as an adult, they are far more sensitive to the changes of sound quality than, say, a person with a metabolic change that's causing a progressive and slowly rolling high-frequency hearing loss.
Yep.
Oftentimes, those patients don't even know they have hearing loss. They're very surprised when I tell them. But the person who maybe has a very, very slight difference between their ears, but it's secondary to something traumatic like an ear infection, or they stuck a Q-tip in their ear and punctured their eardrum, which we don't recommend.
No, that's not a good idea.
No, it's not. Nothing smaller than your elbow should be going in your ear.
Just very quickly, the brain will compensate, right? For a lot of these slight differences between ears or even tinnitus, you can sort of notch filter those out, right?
The brain will try really, really, really hard. When it becomes a problem is when we start to suffer from fatigue, tension, headaches. There's irritability, high blood pressure. There's so many things.
All right, let's go to the phones with Dr. Maggie McCarthy of Albany ENT and Allergy, 800-348-2551. Our friend Cookie is in Somers, New York. Cookie, you're on. Go ahead.
I am so excited. How did you know that I need to buy hearing aids?
I didn't know.
So these are the questions that I have. How satisfactory is a hearing aid that connects to an iPhone? That's number one. Number two is, what features are important to have in a hearing aid that connects to an iPhone? Because I don't have a clue. And which hearing aid brands are most satisfactory to meet my needs?
Okay. Cookie, we try not to do too many brands. I mean, you can mention a couple few, but don't single one out, you know?
So I don't even
okay. Well,
have
that will be a big help to guide me.
Okay.
I don't even really have a specific brand recommendation, and I'll tell you why. It is most important that you find a hearing healthcare provider that you're comfortable with and that is going to honestly address the concerns that you have in your day-to-day life. And having a technology that they are comfortable with programming is going to make a much bigger difference than if I tell you to go get product A in this level of technology and you get it and the person servicing it doesn't know what to do with it. So finding a provider that you're comfortable with is really the most important step. Almost every hearing aid now, especially if it's the kind that sits behind your ear, which is the most commonly worn hearing aid, is probably going to be iPhone compatible. It's actually, in most cases, harder to find one that won't connect to an iPhone than one that will.
Will that cause its own set of problems for the user to figure out how to do it right?
So I will say I've often had patients tell me, I really don't know how to use my phone. I don't like my phone. And I tell them, your hearing aids are going to be what opens up your mind to how great of a tool your phone can be.
So interesting.
It's so much easier to keep track of changes or manipulate your hearing aids when you're doing it visually on an app through your phone, as opposed to having to keep track of how many beeps or what does that mean? What does that sound mean? That click? How do I find the button? Having a hearing aid connected to your iPhone is a huge resource. And many of them now also have a Find My Hearing Aid feature, which can be a huge help. I had a patient who lost his hearing aid out while he was playing golf, and thankfully he found it before it got mowed.
Oh boy.
It can be a really, really handy tool.
Cookie, you want to follow up?
Well, I would just love some brand recommendations that I should look into.
The five top manufacturers in the world are Phonak, Starkey, Oticon, Resound, Signia, Widex. And I'm sure I'm offending someone by forgetting one, but those are the top five. And there are about 300 different quote unquote brands. They all are either, they're manufactured by
those
five.
By the same people.
Yeah.
Cookie, thanks a lot for the call. 800-348-2551. Got a text from the control room. Why are hearing aids so blasted expensive?
That is a tricky question. So there's a lot of different factors that go into it. One of the arguments that the manufacturers will make is you are investing in future research and development. Unfortunately, practically, one of the biggest problems is markup. And so, you know, different offices mark up their costs differently. I would say that, you know, my practice, we are very, very conscientious of how we set our pricing. And we try to be very transparent about what you are purchasing. I can't say that that's the case throughout the whole country.
You know what, Dr. Maggie McCarthy, that was diplomatically put, and I think your business office will be very happy with the response. So let's go back to the phones. Susan and Colony, you're on.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I've just recently been diagnosed with pulsatile tinnitus, and it's really difficult for me to sleep at night. My primary care physician ordered some sleeping pills, Trazodone, they don't work. I hear the humming and buzzing all day, all night. Is there anything I can do? Oh, also, my ENT ordered an MRI that they found I had a small vessel ischemic disease. So how do I get back to normal if it's possible?
Susan, have you had a hearing test?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Yes. I have a hearing test every year. My hearing is good.
Okay, good. So it is really tricky. And I said earlier how, you know, tinnitus can come from a lot of different factors. And this is one of the challenges when people ask, you know, can I take a supplement to treat my tinnitus? Is there a medication I could use? And this is a perfect example of why that's not really a helpful answer to people, because your tinnitus is likely coming from hearing inside body noises. So, you know, if you're hearing your pulse in your ear, there's an artery in your ear. And if you're hearing, especially if you have good hearing, if you're hearing that sound, that can be very distressing. And one of the biggest recommendations that I give to people is utilizing tools that we refer to as progressive tinnitus management. And this is where we decide my brain's ability to override or ignore this sound is not sufficient anymore. So I need to create a sound-enriched environment. I need to introduce a sound that I find calming, relaxing, that I do not find bothersome, and introduce that into the environment. For sleep, it can be really tricky because we also want to make sure that we're not disrupting your sleep hygiene. So I do generally recommend, you know, television can be helpful for some people, but having the TV on, that's not really good sleep hygiene.
Yes, that tends to annoy the spouse.
And you have to make sure it's agreed upon. You know, using...
I use white noise? I do, and I will use soft music also just because I get tired of the white noise.
Excellent.
And it doesn't help.
Okay.
It doesn't help. I still hear it. I'm so tired all the time because I'm getting horrible sleep.
What about some of the other color noises? Pink noise, brown noise, some of these other noises?
Yeah, typically when white noise is not the preferred noise, I recommend there are a lot of apps for sleep sounds or tinnitus where you can mix and match sounds. And sometimes having a more naturally occurring sound can be helpful to people. So, for example, rain, ocean.
Yes.
You know, these sounds that our brain is more apt to accept them, that can be helpful for some people. You know, Susan, another thing that I want to mention, just because you mentioned that this is disturbing your sleep quite significantly, sometimes people feel very uncomfortable at the idea of seeking cognitive behavioral therapy. But CBT or cognitive behavioral therapy is one of the primary components of the treatment of tinnitus, especially if it's disrupting your sleep, because we don't want your brain to change how you're behaving throughout the day because you're very, very fatigued. And so, you know, if the sound isn't working, if you've not been given additional resources from your ENT or the audiologist working with your ENT, then, you know, cognitive behavioral therapy would be an option as well. And typically, there's not necessarily like a specific person or a specific type. Cognitive behavioral therapy is a well-established treatment plan. And, you know, we always direct people to seek someone who's in network with their insurance through their primary care manager. But, you know, a lot of times it's just having, if you could have a person who can talk with you through those different approaches and make sure that we're moving productively forward.
Yeah.
I think that would be a really great help for you at this point.
Susan, we got to take a break here, but thank you for the call. 800-348-2551 is our number. Audiology Today with Dr. Maggie McCarthy of Albany ENT and Allergy Services. We'll be back. Vox Pop on WAMC is Medical Monday, and Dr. Maggie McCarthy joins us from Albany ENT and Allergy. A couple emails, and then we'll jump back to the phones. 800-348-2551. Paul writes in, CAPD, is there any treatment for central auditory processing disorder? What is that first?
Central auditory processing disorder is when you don't have hearing loss, but you are presenting with symptoms like you have hearing loss.
So that's a neurological deal.
Yes. So this is happening in the auditory centers of the brain, and it is indicative that your brain is not utilizing the sound the way that it ought to. Oftentimes, the treatment for CAPD is very similar to the treatment for hearing loss. So hearing aids have directional microphones. They have noise suppression. They have the ability to filter speech and amplify out that speech that we hope you want to listen to. And that is often very helpful for people with CAPD. I will say, though, CAPD is most commonly diagnosed in children. And so the treatments are a little bit different when we're talking about, you know, an adult who is kind of putting these pieces together and realizing this explains a lot about why they have difficulty hearing or listening versus a kiddo who's getting diagnosed.
All right, this one from Jay. Recent ENT visit showed positive ear pressure instead of negative. What could be the problem with that? I do use a CPAP machine.
That sounds like a very small tube that goes from your middle ear space to your sinus. Your Eustachian tube probably is not working the way that it's supposed to. The Eustachian tube is the same tube that's responsible for equalizing the pressure when we go up in the mountains or when we fly in an airplane. That tube is very, very small, and it does not take a lot to block up that tube, whether it's inflammation, dust, allergens, or when I see little kids, I will tell parents it only takes one sniffle for that tube to get blocked up. So that is likely what's going on there.
You know, I tell you what, as a child, I had so many ear infections and my ears popped so many times. How much damage do you do long term to your hearing from a popped eardrum?
It really depends on the person. I would say if you've only had, you know, a handful of eardrum ruptures, you're probably going to be okay. But the bigger thing is, did it happen naturally? So same as like if I tear a muscle, right? So if it tears naturally because I fell, because I'm very, very graceful, I don't believe it or not, you know, that's going to heal naturally because the tear occurred in a natural fashion, as opposed to a traumatic attack or cutting that can cause more damage or take longer to heal. And so we see people all the time who had, they had ear tubes or they had ear infections as a kid, their eardrums ruptured, and they're fine as adults.
All right, fair enough. What'd you say? No, it's let's go back to the phones. John is in Poughkeepsie. John, you're on.
Hello.
Hello.
Oh, yeah, this is John. So, let's see, two things. Thank you for being on, Doctor. Thank you, Ray, for taking my call.
You bet.
One thing, just a little info. I got some hearing aids about 8-9 years ago, and I bought them here. Then I went to Europe on vacation, saw some friends in the hearing business, and I was able to get. They were $2,000 less.
Ah.
So it could have paid for my trip. So that's my comment on markup.
Ah, fine.
But okay, the other thing is, and this is my own problem. So I got hearing aids, and they did an MRI on my brain to see what's going on, and they found that there is a benign growth on my auditory nerve. Okay? Now, what that does is it actually distorts the sound in my left ear, and it's even by going back to the audiologist, you know, it's still driving me crazy because I'll hear sound and it'll be partially distorted, and it gets especially bad with movies and things like that. Can you give me any advice on that?
Absolutely, John. And those are pretty common occurrences, unfortunately, in the ENT realm as an audiologist in that environment. I will say we always try to aid that ear, even mm-hmm. if you don't have great word understanding, even if the distortion is problematic. We always try, at least in our practice, we always try to aid that ear because it gives you that awareness of sound. And some patients respond really positively to it, but it sounds like that's not the case for you. Sometimes we have to move to what's called a cross device. And a cross device takes the sound from the poor side, and it doesn't put any sound into that ear at all. It just sends it over mm-hmm. to the better ear. And so a lot uh-huh. of patients find that they, if the distortion becomes too prohibitive, they have to move to that bicross or cross setup. And so you would just have, it looks like a hearing aid, just like a regular hearing aid. You would still wear mm-hmm. two.
Sure.
It's just one would be the microphone, and all right. of the sound would go into the other ear.
You're not putting a wire through John's head. How are you getting
Not anymore. We don't have to have them connected by
Did
a wire anymore.
Oh, boy.
Not through the head, around
okay.
the head.
Oh, thank God. All right. Now, how do you do it then?
They use, it depends. Sometimes they use near field magnetic, it communicates like an FM transmission.
Sure. Amazing.
But the sound gets sent over to the better ear, and then we're able to manipulate that sound independently as well as the audiologist or hearing healthcare provider.
John, you want to follow up, mm-hmm. sir?
Yeah, okay. Well, that's not, because sometimes I find by just turning that one hearing aid off, I think I hear better. Or other cases, sometimes when I'm turning the hearing aids up to hear better. I mean, of course, then the other one comes up at the same time, and you know, and it doesn't really help. So I do appreciate that.
John, another thing to maybe ask your hearing healthcare provider about is if they can test your hearing when you repeat the words in both ears at the same time. We always test mm-hmm. one ear independently because we're treating each ear independently.
Ah.
Sure.
But sometimes a good quick measure to see, is it worth it to continue with this binaural setup of hearing aids, or should we switch to a different approach? Testing both mm-hmm. ears at the same time for those words can show you, even if it's just helpful for you to compare, how do I mm-hmm. do in my left and right ear independently? And then theoretically, when I go to both ears, it should either be the same as the best ear or better. But if you're getting mm-hmm. worse, that would indicate to me that maybe we should consider the cross device.
John, thanks a lot for the call. The number is 800-348-2551. The guest, Dr. Maggie McCarthy of Albany ENT and Allergy Services. All right, very quickly, going back to the DSP hearing aids. You know how there are those headphones out there that are so-called noise canceling? They phase. They're taking the sound and they're phasing against it. Do some of these hearing aids do that for background noise?
They do. It depends on what type of background noise you're experiencing. And so let's say it's a road noise. Road noise is a good example. We're not using phase to cancel out road noise. We're using a filter. So we're just not going to allow something that low to come in.
So it's a low-cut filter.
Correct.
Okay.
And maybe that low-cut filter isn't on all the time. Maybe it only cuts in when you're moving over 10 miles an hour or...
Well, how do the hearing aids know you're moving over 10 miles an hour? What, are they GPS attached?
It depends on the app.
Oh, my heavens.
And if you have that set up. But usually it's just an old-fashioned, like, they have pedometers in them, too. They'll tell you your steps. You could close rings. You could do all kinds of things.
This is a brave and scary new world. Let's go to Mary in Newburgh. Mary, you're on with Dr. Maggie McCarthy.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yep, go ahead.
Okay. You know, for that other lady that called with the pulsatile tinnitus,
yeah.
Tell her to get or if she's still listening, a pillow sound bar from Amazon. It's got little speakers. It goes right under your pillow, and you can listen to podcast music ever, whatever you want.
So you could listen to Vox Pop in the middle of the night, Mary?
Yes, you can. You can listen, and you would put me to sleep right away.
Boy, that's been said before, let me tell you.
But that works.
Okay.
And Mary, I'm glad you said that because there's also soft headbands that do the same thing.
Oh.
So there's lots of options out there.
Well, the headbands, the little speaker is hard and it's hitting right up against your ear. This goes under your pillow and the sound travels through the pillow. So it's nice and soft.
That sounds good.
So it's
better. Nice.
I've used them all. I mean, I am like number one on that part. But anyway, my question is I have mid-range hearing loss, and it just happened to happen the same time I got trigeminal neuralgia, which is also affects my ear fullness and ear pain, and a different type of tinnitus I get when I have these attacks. I've had tinnitus for years, but this is actually coming out of my ear. It's not in my head.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so, you know, that part I deal with. But my doctors say that the mid-range hearing loss, and it's only in that ear, has nothing to do, and it's not related to the TMJ, the trigeminal neuralgia.
Mm-hmm.
Is that true or what?
If I'm understanding what you mean by mid-range, you're talking about the middle frequencies on the hearing test?
Yeah, the cookie bite hearing loss.
So a cookie bite hearing loss tends to be genetic in nature. So I talked a little bit about that kind of metabolic change that's slowly sloping over time. It looks like a nice sledding hill, and then maybe it progresses to a steep ski slope. That is a very different type of hearing change than the ones that happen right smack dab in the middle of that audiogram. And so typically we find that the middle cookie bite style, it looks like someone came over your hearing test and just took a bite right out of the top of the test. And that tends to be genetic in nature, family history, and you may have had an aspect of that, but as it progresses over time, it starts to bulge and kind of spread out and become more like a cup or a bowl. And that typically is family history, genetic related.
Okay, Mary.
Okay.
Go ahead.
All right. Is there a hearing aid for that?
I would definitely recommend hearing aids. For that, I will say,
but it's only the one. It's only the one ear. So, can you get a hearing aid for one ear?
Oh, absolutely. Especially since when you have hearing loss on one side, you're much more likely to have difficulty with localization, hearing and background noise, differentiating between where things are coming from or who's talking. We absolutely recommend treating, even if you just have hearing loss in one ear.
Mary, thanks a lot. We have time for a couple of more here. Let's go to Peter in Gilderland. Peter, you're on with Dr. Maggie McCarthy.
Hi. I had a question, which I'll get to maybe if we have time, but I had a question about John's cross-hearing and Ray being a musical guy. How would that cross-hearing be affected by, like, listening to stereo speakers? Would you get the stereo effect?
Great question, man.
In one ear?
That is a really good question. So with most... Now, you're talking about, like, you have a sound system that you're listening
stereo
to.
Well,
speaker.
I don't have anything. I was just following up on John.
All right.
Oh, okay. Well, the reason why I say that is because, like, a lot of times now people will wear headphones or their music, whatever they're listening to, is actually produced to give the perception of space in the way the sound is delivered to you.
Yeah.
And so that gives you a perception of stereo. That has to do with timing, not physical location.
Okay.
And so that is preserved with a cross.
All right, Peter, quickly to your question, because we only have a couple of minutes left here.
So my question was, 2 years ago or so, I went in for basically a routine hearing test. They said I was generally okay, but then when she saw the high frequencies, I forget, but a little difference in the right and left ear, she wanted me to go to get a scan. And I said, why? And she finally maybe didn't want to say it, but finally she said, well, we're going to look for an acoustic pneumoma, which was negative. Wondering what's that all about? Why, what do I have that made her think acoustic pneumoma, but then I didn't have one?
Okay.
So if you have a difference between your ears, we want to make sure that there's nothing growing inside of your head that's pushing on the auditory nerve, because if you have hearing loss from noise or medicine, medicine goes in your body, it goes everywhere. Noise, you didn't leave one ear at home when you went to a concert or something like that. So anytime there's a difference, it doesn't mean it's always a tumor or a schwannoma. There are a lot of different reasons why one could change before the other, but that's what we want to make sure nothing's growing in there.
All right, Peter, thanks a lot. Very quickly now to Peggy and Saugerties. Peggy, you have to make it very quick.
Hi, I have, I'm deaf from nerve damage in my left ear. I have been forever, since I was 3. I can hear exceptionally well with my right ear. Are there hearing aids for just one ear? Will it help? Is there anything to help?
So depending on the degree of hearing loss that you have, and if you've had that hearing loss since you were 3, which isn't technically prelingual, but that's, you're not used to using that for listening to speech. My broad recommendation would be probably be an appropriate candidate for a cochlear implant evaluation. And if that was not something you were comfortable with, I would recommend that cross style of device where we would take the sound from the poorer ear and send it over to the better ear.
Peggy, we'll have to leave it there. Thank you very much for the call. Dr. Maggie McCarthy, you make hearing loss fun. Thank you for being here.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been a blast.
Support comes from Woodland Pond at New Paltz, a life plan community at the foot of the Schwangunks near education, the arts, and outdoor activities. Future residency waitlist available, woodlandpondnp.org. Thanks again to Dr. Maggie McCarthy of Albany ENT and Allergy Services for joining us today. Thank you for listening. Thanks for the calls and the emails. I'll be honest with you. It's 10 calls or whatever we couldn't get to today. At least 10 emails. We'll do this topic again in 4 or 5 months. So if you have a question, hang on to it. We'll do it again. The number. The show's over. Okay, time for Nappy. Mike Bowen's our engineer, and Jim Mountier screened the calls. Good job, Jim. Tomorrow it's Antiques with Colin Stair and Lisa Thomas. Oh, I love that. Being an antique myself, we'll have a wonderful time. We'll see you, too.